Please, well, you don't have to, but in our order of service, our opening words are number, in the hymnal, our opening words are number 442. They're also going to be on the PowerPoint. Let's say these together. They are here on the PowerPoint? I can't. Yes, okay. We bid you welcome, who come with weary spirit seeking rest, who come with troubles that are too much with you, who come hurt and afraid. We bid you welcome, who come with hope in your heart, who come with anticipation in your step, who come proud and joyous. We bid you welcome, who are seekers of a new faith, who come to probe and explore, who come to learn. We bid you welcome, who enter this hall as a homecoming, who have found here room for your spirit, who find in this people a family. Whoever you are, whatever you are, wherever you are on your journey, we bid you welcome. This sermon started, the title, Sacrilege, Cultural Borrowing, and My Theology. Not necessarily in that order, somewhat intertwined. My theology is throughout. This sermon started as a speech for a group called Town and Gown Supper Club. When I started, it was not intended as a sermon. I picked a religious topic because I have a long history of being interested in religion. For instance, my master's thesis in history, completed almost 48 years ago, was about a particular variety of religious groups. We won't go into that now. Also, some of the members of the Supper Club are religion or philosophy professors. I don't have to worry about a grade. I wanted to talk about something that already interests some of the people, and this subject very much interests me. Now, I knew a long time ago that I was going to be giving that speech to the Supper Club this coming Tuesday. So I've been looking for a topic for a long time, and last summer, while I was still looking for a topic, I was privileged to listen in on and somewhat participate in a conversation two Unitarian Universalists were having, two of our members, about their personal response to a particular service, Sunday service here, about 3 or 4 years ago. Talking about it this past summer, a service that had happened 3 or 4 years ago. It was either wonderful or both had felt uncomfortable about that service and still carried what I call hurt or pain from that service. Did I say clearly enough, both of them were then and still are now members of this congregation? My own official Unitarian Universalist membership stretches over a period of 51 years. The longer I'm a UU, the more convinced I am I ought to be able to translate enough to be able to sit down and worship with almost anyone. I respect both of the two U's having the conversation about how they felt about that one particular service. Their conversation started me on a theological journey to understand how a Unitarian Universalist service could feel somewhat sacrilegious to two Unitarian Universalists. I should mention they did not mention sacrilege, but that is the term that came to my mind. The term sacrilege already interested me because of my UU nephew's insistence that cultural appropriation is often a form of sacrilegious oppression. So let's back up. What is sacrilege? I'm going to read a definition here that I didn't write. Sacrilegious is often used in reference to religion or to religious things, so it is easy to see why people might be confused by its spelling. However, sacrilegious and religious are not from the same roots. Religious comes from the Latin word religio, reverence, religion, whereas sacrilegious and the related noun sacrilege come from Latin roots meaning sacred and to steal. The earliest sense of sacrilege in use since the beginning of the 14th century was concerned with the theft, misuse, or desecration of sacred or holy things. It is still used in this sense quite often, but has also taken on a broader meaning in which it refers to irreverence to a person, place, or thing which may or may not have recognized religious significance. Now let's return to those thrilling days of yesteryear, and you get extra points if you remember what that reference is from. Historically, the Unitarian denomination is based on a belief that the concept of the Trinity was wrong. Perhaps their most important religious contribution was early support for religious freedom or tolerance, as found in the Edict of Torda, which was issued on January 13, 1568, in Transylvania. The concluding paragraph of the edict says in part, and Karen shared this with us last year, but I think it's worth repeating. In every place, the preachers shall preach and explain the gospel, each according to his understanding of it. And if the congregation like it, well. If not, no one shall compel them, for their souls would not be satisfied. But if they shall be permitted to keep a preacher whose teaching, but they shall be permitted to keep a preacher whose teachings they approve. Therefore, none of the superintendents or others shall abuse the preachers. No one shall be reviled for his religion by anyone, according to the previous statutes, they would have been. And it is not permitted that anyone should threaten anyone else by imprisonment or by removal from his post for his teaching. For faith is the gift of God. The Universalist denomination, which was called the Universalist Church of America, traces its roots to the 18th century when John Murray's immigration to America brought a doctrine of universal salvation. John Murray wasn't the earliest or only immigrant to America who also had a doctrine of universal salvation. Some Anabaptists, many Moravians, and there were also others, had the same idea. It's just that the Universalist Church was more particularly, this was their thing. In Waterloo, Iowa, a 1954 Centennial Commission noted that the second religious group organized in Waterloo was a Universalist group, which began meeting in 1867 and built a church in 1889. A Unitarian Fellowship was established in Cedar Falls in the 1940s. The two national UU denominations merged in 1961. And I know there was about a year's difference. I don't know if our local groups merged together a year before or a year after. I think it was probably the year after in 1962, but I think also they'd been talking about it for a while. The local merged group called themselves Unitarian Universalist Society. They didn't want to be fellowship or church because that would connect too much closely to what one of the previous groups. Unitarian Universalist Society of Blackhawk County. Again, not Waterloo, not Cedar Falls, something that joined the two together, which later became Cedar Valley Unitarian Universalist. Reading the Edict of Torda today, one might think it extended religious freedom to all groups in that area. History wasn't that simple. But it was part of the foundation which helped lead both to religious freedom for all groups and also to all individuals. And that was part, through the Reformation in general, of how we got to the priesthood of all believers. Within Unitarian Universalism and in some other denominations, we've also come, in effect, to what I call the popehood of all believers. The fact that an adult curriculum called Building Your Own Theology is one of the most popular courses published by the Unitarian Universalist Association is not accidental. UUs do expect and use that amount of religious freedom for themselves and are comfortable being in services next to other members who also use that freedom, even though the individual results are different. We Cedar Valley Unitarian Universalist members are atheists, agnostics, Buddhists, Christians, Jews, pagans, perhaps others. Sometimes we UUs may need to adjust whatever sense of sacrilege we have so we can sit next to each other in a service. I still have some sense of sacrilege. I have a bass voice. One of my sources of joy is singing the bass part on hymns. To me, the current UU hymnal is somewhat sacrilegious because the harmonizing parts on two of my favorite songs are missing. In this hymnal, you know, this one, both O Come, O Come, Emmanuel and Morning Has Broken are printed to be sung in unison. The harmonizing parts in the previous hymnal were left out of this hymnal. It's the same words, it's the same tune, it's the same song, except I don't get to sing the same notes. The omission of harmonizing voice parts doesn't meet what most people would call sacrilege, but that omission does create for me a feeling of loss. Someday, I think, I'm going to photocopy pages from an old hymnal with the harmonized parts and paste them into the new hymnal. Now more to the meat, sort of. Those two UUs in that conversation talking about a UU religious service from about 2 to 4 years after that service. In that service, they felt something they individually held sacred was being somewhat violated. They did not use the term sacrilege, but to me, a UU listening to and participating in that conversation, I thought they were talking about that particular UU service as though they had been in the presence of sacrilege or something close to what they regarded as sacrilege. Listening to them, I wondered on the one hand, how can they really be UUs if they can have that reaction within a UU religious service? Even while I was having that thought, I knew deep down they were and are Unitarian Universalists. So what had happened? Both of them felt an emotional touch point was stepped on in that service. It was a communion service on an anniversary Sunday in January in this building. The Universalists first met in 1867, later built a in Waterloo, later built a church in 1889. I don't know if Anniversary Sunday refers to 1867 or 1889. But this service, which was sometime after, sometime around 2010, after a long time without any communion services, our minister at the time, Eva Cameron, started having communion on each anniversary Sunday, celebrating our Universalist heritage on the first Sunday in January. I participated in most of those services and was not offended by them. A few years later, I was privileged to be a part of that conversation I mentioned with two other UUs who attended one of those, at least one of those communion services, and who both felt offended by that service. Both felt the service encouraged, and they used this word, play-acting by non-believers. Both felt that sense of play-acting was not sufficiently sacred or not respectful enough to what they regarded as the intent of communion. One of them was no longer Christian. One of them was still Christian. Both were disturbed by a lack of a sense of sacredness in the communion service. Neither of them used the term sacrilegious. I don't know if either of them would say that that particular UU communion service was sacrilegious. But to my experience in that conversation, was a catalyst leading me to this sermon. What had happened? Two UUs for whom I have a lot of respect felt damaged by a lack of sacredness in a UU communion service. I did not have the same feeling. Why were they not as tolerant as me? Why was I not as damaged as they? After considering these issues off and on for about 6 months, I think I finally have an answer. What we believe intellectually, or what we are willing to allow intellectually, is not the same as what we are willing to allow emotionally. Emotional responses that build up and are reinforced over decades can't be as easily converted as our intellectual response. Given new information today, we might change our not mind and say, we now believe something new, but our emotional response won't change today. That slow emotional change might explain part of the persistence of emotional attachments, positive or negative, such as the persistence of racism on the negative side. And it may explain why a behavior that was regarded by us in the past as sacred can still give us an emotional twinge or hurt or damage, even though our current beliefs don't hold that behavior as sacred. In my case, the fact that I wasn't bothered by the communion service could mean my emotional attachments to my past beliefs wasn't as strong as I had thought. Last night, I thought of another explanation. I wondered why I didn't think of it before. In high school, I acted in 3 all-school plays. At UNI, 4 plays on the main stage, 1 student production and 1 Wesley Foundation play. I've written or presented several skits for UU finance campaigns. Play acting doesn't always work, not for everyone. But sometimes play acting conveys truth. Sacraments don't always work either. Sometimes the outer sign of a hoped for inner grace is just the outer sign of an inner desire for grace. If the only result of play acting with a sacrament is awakening a spark of desire for inner grace for some, then I think the play acting was worthwhile. In another conversation with a UU who was a nephew of mine, I listened to a righteous expression of anger as he talked about the instances of what I call cultural borrowing, which he calls cultural appropriation, and which he regards as cultural oppression of Native Americans. I think for my UU nephew that what he was describing was sacrilege. I agree that is true part of the time. I still think most cultural borrowing is just borrowing. Just the most recent example of what humans do, and not oppression in intent or effect. We don't agree on that yet, my nephew and I. We are still talking. And that is another example of what humans do. We are here among people of differing beliefs, with different senses of what is sacred, because we choose to rely somewhat on each other and our differences to help us to a better path. We are here among people of differing beliefs with different senses of what is sacred, because we choose to rely somewhat on each other and our differences to help us to a better path.